Good afternoon and welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss any of your firearms-related needs with you, whether it be training, firearm selection, whatever it is. Accessories, we'll be more than glad to help you out. Mark and I are just back from a week-long hiatus to Texas, where we went to the AccuSport Buyers Group Conference, and we had a very productive and fun week. We've got some very good information on some products that are out there. We also made arrangements to bring products to our customers in a timely basis because of our attendance at that conference pretty much guaranteed priority shipping. So we're kind of in line for some guns. Matter of fact, while we were on our way back, a shipment arrived, and I'm going down to pick up another shipment here this afternoon. So they've held true to their promises already, and here it is only a couple days after our return on Thursday that we're already starting to see product flow, and that's a good thing for our customers and makes us, from a business perspective, very happy because we can meet your needs in a very timely manner. I'm meeting a couple of individuals down at the range around 4:30 for them to go ahead and purchase guns that have been shipped in a very short period of time. But the conference was an overwhelming success, to say the least. Mark and I got the opportunity on Monday to kind of step out of our realm of training and coordinating the business and get out and have some fun shooting. They had a tremendous outdoor range.
Oh, that
range.
Wasn't all business? Yeah, I thought it was. No?
There was business related to it, but for the most part, they had a wonderful outdoor range that had, I'm guessing, over 100 shooting points. They had multiple ranges divided into different types of shooting. They had long-distance ranges for rifle. They had steel. They had pop-up targets. They had just standard paper targets, and they let people step up to the line and shoot whatever the manufacturers and the wholesalers brought out there. And we got an opportunity to shoot some of the new products, which we'll tell you about today and in future shows. And it was just a good day. It was a day that I think everybody should have an opportunity, anybody in the business should have an opportunity doing, because you get to rub elbows with others who are in the similar situation, in addition to having a little bit of fun. And that's sometimes something that we're missing, because we get so wrapped up in the day-to-day running of the business and teaching the classes that we don't get to have a lot of fun. But that day we had some fun.
Yeah, we did. And we also had some opportunities to meet with some leadership in the different industries. For example, had a breakfast meeting with the CEO of Smith & Wesson, one with Ruger. And it was a real good opportunity to just talk to these folks. Another one with Beretta. They have a lot of good things to say. They had some good questions for the audience, and the audience had some good questions for them. It was a good opportunity to get a little bit of a feel as to where these guys are going, what they're looking to do, what they see for the future of the firearms industry. And nobody sees it as anything but pretty exciting, especially here as, you know, we see what's coming up during between now and November with the election. We look back 4 years ago at the presidential election, and the numbers were just off the charts, and people are still just as concerned now as they were then, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, you heard us last week talk about the SHOT Show and the benefit to the industry for attendance at that facility, and one of our employees went out to the SHOT Show, and the main difference here is the SHOT Show, you kind of get overwhelmed by the sheer vastness of aisles. I mean, there's just miles and miles and miles of
aisles.
Of product, aisles and aisles, miles and miles of product, and it's sometimes overwhelming. But at this show, it was confined to just one large room in the convention center, and there were, I'm going to guess, between 100 and 200 vendors, and we were able to get to the places we wanted to get to, talk about the things that are useful to us. It's certainly useful to see all the stuff that's out there, but at this particular venue that we were at, most of the stuff applied to the business that we do, and that was nice to be able to get right to the point and get things going, and like I said, get things ordered. And our range guns, about 90% of them are already in, and we've expanded our range gun inventory about 25% to include some FN products and some additional car products and products that you, the customer, have indicated you want to try out. So make sure that you check into that here in the next week. We'll have a full listing available for you, and you can start doing the try it before you buy it, or our members can take advantage of the opportunity to rent those guns and try them out to see if that's something they're interested in. So with very few exceptions, they should all be in by the end of the month. and are ready for you to start trying and seeing if you want to make some changes. But the show was an overwhelming success, and we're very excited about the opportunity to meet those people. And Mark mentioned the CEO breakfast, and I happened to go to the one of the breakfasts with the Ruger executive, and he truly appreciates the input from you, the customer, and from us, the retailer, because he said that is what, in fact, drives their business. And I want to give you just one example. The LCP, a couple years ago, it's a award of excellence, gun of the year. It's their 380 compact gun, had huge sales, kind of catapulted them to the top of the line until the development of the LC9 came out last year, which just improved on that standing. But when they developed the LCP, they sent it out with two magazines. Now, this sounds minor, but when they went to the LC9, they wanted to keep the cost point the same as the LCP, but they only sent it out with one magazine in order to do that. And he, right there in the show, recognized that from a business standpoint, that wasn't a very good decision, because most all of us, whether we're in the sales business or you in the consumer business, you want and should have two magazines with all guns that you purchase. So that's a major thing that they're going to correct. But sitting down and talking to these people about real issues was really nice, because they do listen. He told us some other stories just about things that he experienced as he's ultimately in charge to the board of directors. And he said when he decides to invest $500,000, $1.5 million in a project, it better prove to be profitable or they're going to be on him. And he mentioned that the only way I can guarantee or almost guarantee that I'm going to make the right decisions is if I listen to the people who are the consumers of the products. And they do listen. It's not like, some people think that the chief executive officers of some companies are just out there and they're kind of in their own world. And I'm sure that might be the case in some places, but I want to assure you, and I think Mark had a similar experience with Smith & Wesson, these people are listening because they realize that to maximize profit potential on their end, they've got to deliver what you, the consumer, want.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The folks at Smith & Wesson had some really interesting points to make, and they opened the floor up and took a lot of very good questions. There were some folks that were there that had been there the year before, some folks that said, I said this and that and the other thing about what we were getting from Smith & Wesson, and I tell you, over the last year, you have really improved, or this is still a problem, things haven't changed, or whatever the situation is. I talked about some of the Walther products, which are made by Smith & Wesson, and the fact that the safety that's up on the slide is not a decocker, so it's a double-action, single-action trigger system, but in order to decock it, you have to put the safety in the safe mode and then put your finger on the trigger when you know you have a round loaded into the chamber and drop the hammer. That's an inherently unsafe operation, not because the gun is unsafe, but because it creates a pattern of behavior that's just likely to cause a problem in the future. And when the session broke up, the product manager for that line came over and talked to me, and we had a really good conversation. And he said, you're right, and that's something we hadn't really thought about. It's not that the gun is inherently unsafe, but that somebody might do something. All you have to do is make one slight mistake in that process, get one thing out of sequence, and the gun's going to go off when what you're really intending to do is just decock the firearm so that you're ready to holster it, and instead you end up firing the gun. That's a problem. And they said, that's a good point. We hadn't really thought of it that way.
You know, what's really neat about this is when you see these individuals, product managers, interacting with each other, I'll give you a case in point, kind of follow in line with just what Mark said. Ruger came out with their SR-22 this year, and it looks very similar to the Walther P-22. However, it has a decock lever that enables you to safely lower the hammer to put the gun into the double-action mode. It also serves as a safety, but it enables you to lower the hammer to put it in the double-action mode so that it's more consistent with the way we train. Now, I got to believe that at some point somebody got the ear of the people at Ruger and said, hey, that's an issue. We need to help the industry deal with that, because from a training perspective, it makes a big difference, and they sure as heck did that, and it's a fine shooting product. We have that in our rental gun inventory at the present time, and I encourage you to come out and take advantage and see for yourself the improvements that they've made. But those are the types of things that the manufacturers are doing for the industry. They're making it easier for us to train people on how to shoot guns, which ultimately results in us being able to sell guns that are best suited for the individual. And I just want to reiterate that is what one of the many things that we specialize at Sim Trainers. We're able to custom fit the gun to suit the individual consumer by letting them shoot not only that gun, but a variety of guns that we think they're interested in and that they're interested in. I had a father-son come in last night for a lesson. The son was a teenager, and he had a particular item in mind. He wanted to shoot the Beretta 92FS because he knew that was the gun that had been utilized by the military, and he wanted to try that gun. He thought that was the gun for him. And so when I that wouldn't be the gun that we would put people into initially, because it's, in our minds, a complicated process where you have a decock lever, then you have a double action, single action trigger pull, and it just makes it a little bit more difficult from a training perspective to train people. So I started him off with a couple of other guns. We started with the Glock, then we moved to the Smith & Wesson M&P, then we moved to the Springfield, which his dad had just bought the week before and was hoping that his son would be interested in shooting so he wouldn't have to invest in another gun. The father made a decision later on that it's probably best that he just go ahead and buy his son the Glock because he shot it so well and he liked it, that wasn't the issue. But when we got down to the point where I gave him the opportunity to try the Beretta, he tried four shots and he goes, "Now I see what you're saying. That is not the gun for me. And it was nice of you to let me shoot it, but I can see very easily that that was not the gun for me." Now let's take a different scenario where dad and son walk into the gun store. Son says he wants a Beretta. Beretta is a good price point for a retailer, so a retailer would be more than willing to sell that gun to somebody without any consideration for the issues involved in many cases. Now there'll be some retailers out there who may take the individual through the process of explaining the difference between safe action or same action and double single action and the pros and cons of both, but the beauty about the method that we utilize is not only do we tell them about it, we give them the opportunity to feel it, to see it themselves, and it makes a huge difference. And last night was just case in point.
Yeah, you can really tell if a gun is not going to work for you by just holding it in your hand. But you really can't tell for certain that is the right gun for you until you've had a chance to shoot it, because how it feels when it shoots, it makes a huge difference. And that can be a big discriminator. If you haven't had a chance to shoot the model that you're planning on purchasing, it really puts you at a significant disadvantage, and it makes it, a lot of people come in and end up having spent money on a gun, and now the gun is a used gun because they've tried it, they fired it a few times, they say, "Oh man, I just really don't like the way that feels." And that's the beauty of being able to get a chance to shoot it before you purchase.
Yeah, we've had people come to our concealed carry class with particular guns. Maybe it was the gun that their husband or their spouse or their boyfriend or whoever told them that they should go ahead and take. And within a very short period of time, we realize that it's either too much gun or certainly not the right gun. And we can go get them one that we think is more suited. And then if that one doesn't work out, we can go to another level and get them another one. And in every case that I'm aware of, we've gotten them to something they're comfortable with. It may not have been what they ultimately bought, but it certainly was way better than the one they came there with, and gave them a much more positive experience and made it all the more beneficial. So I just want to encourage people, before you go out and buy a gun, take advantage of our Try It Before You Buy It, where we'll have about 32 to 35 different guns in stock by the end of the month to give you the opportunity to try several guns. And in addition to the industry movement, we're going to stock some 40s and 45s, because there's people who not only want 9mm, but they want higher caliber guns to try out.
We're going to take our first break for the hour, so if you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio. And when we get back, we'll talk with Andy in Arcanum, who has a question for us. And we'll take your calls as well on Shooting from the Hip. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290. And now, 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and let's go right out to the phones. Let's talk to Andy in Arcanum. Andy, welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
We're doing fine. How can we help you?
I was calling in regard to a newer handgun that Kel-Tec has come out with called the PMR-30. It's a 22 mag, 30-round magazine, and I've looked around for it, and I'm having a lot of trouble tracking them down. The availability seems to be really, really low on them, and I didn't know if you guys had any information in regards to those.
Well, two things. I know it came out probably middle of last year. At least it was showcased at in a couple of the magazines and some of the trade shows. But I haven't seen any, mainly because we do not carry that line. Haven't heard anything either way, and I can honestly say I don't think I've seen one in the hands of anybody at the range or anybody talking about it. It may be because we're not big Kel-Tec people at the range, and I just want to encourage you to at least give some thought to the new Smith & Wesson M&P 22 that just came out, because it is being made available in large quantities as we speak. It came out probably the latter part of last year. It was hard to get for the first going October, November, and we've gotten six or seven in the last month. So They're becoming available, and it will satisfy a similar need at about the same price point. The difference will be I'm not aware of the Smith & Wesson being 22 Magnum. Now, are you looking for that for a plinking gun, a fun shooting gun, or were you looking at it as a concealed carry or self-defense option?
My understanding is that's a full frame, you know, like a full size gun. It's probably a little bit too large in my opinion for a carry gun for me.
Right.
I was looking at it more because you know, the round itself being a 22 mag, you still have a decent amount of power out of that relatively small round, and being that it's a 30 round magazine, it just sounds like a gun that would be a blast to get a hold of.
Well, I agree. No pun intended, but I'm sure it would be a blast to get a hold of, and certainly a blast to shoot, literally and figuratively. And we just looked it up when we saw your call in the queue earlier, and it's comparable in size to the M&P. Its overall length is 7.9 inches, overall height 5.8 inches. Unloaded, it's 14 ounces, and the barrel length is 4.3. You said a couple of things there. First of all, if it's not going to be used for self-defense or personal safety, I don't know that you really need to worry about the fact that it offers 22 mag versus the others that do not. That would be the only possible consideration, although I don't think it's that big a deal. And quite frankly, I'm not big on 22 for self-defense unless it's the only option you have. And again, it doesn't matter whether you have 10 rounds or 30 rounds. It's how quick you hit them and where you hit them that's more important than what you hit them with. So I think
that... Out of curiosity, what's the magazine capacity on the Smith & Wesson?
They come in 10 and 12.
Is it 22 long?
Yeah, they come in 10 and 12 round.
Yes, it's a 22 long rifle.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your help, gentlemen. Like I said, I know a gentleman who has one. I haven't had a chance to fire it yet. Mm-hmm. But that particular gun, like I said, the magazine capacity, and it just sounds like a gun that'd be a lot of fun to take out and shoot. And like I said, I appreciate your help. And
sure.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your call. And our recommendation there would be to see if your friend can give you an opportunity to shoot it so you can handle it, because it may be an item that is in such high demand they just didn't anticipate that, and they're just having a hard time keeping up, so it might not be available right away. But I certainly would encourage you to go shoot it and then compare it to one of the others, like the M&P 22, which I have to tell you that right before we went out to Texas, I shot the M&P 22, and it's a fine shooting gun.
Yeah.
Now, you said the price point on the Smith was pretty comparable.
Yes. Right. Yes, they're both going to probably be in the ballpark of $379 to $459. I saw MSRP within $20. Actually, the Kel-Tec, I think,
within
was a little
$4.
Higher.
Yeah, the Kel-Tec was $419 MSRP, and the Smith & Wesson is $419. So, yeah, they're real close.
But you guys said you don't carry the Kel-Tec line at all, then?
Not ordinarily.
Don't. Is there a particular reason?
We got to take a break, and we'll try to answer that when we come back from the break. Now, this is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Good afternoon, and welcome, listeners, back to the show. I'm Jeff in with Mark, and right before the break, one of the callers had asked the question about why we would not recommend Kel-Tec. Well, first of all, as we've been pretty consistent since we opened or started on the air, we don't want to bash any brands. It's just that we have brands that we feel more comfortable with based on performance. And quite frankly, the Kel-Tec just, we don't see a whole lot of them. So we don't venture out into that realm. And certainly if you want to buy a Kel-Tec, try a Kel-Tec, compare it to other guns, you make your own decision. That's the best route we would recommend anybody that's considering purchasing one go, because again, we think they're all doing it for the right reason. It's just that some are better than others, just like any product on the market, but you make your own decision and go from there. Mark, let's go back out to the phones.
Let's talk to Tim, who's calling from Versailles. Tim, welcome to the show.
How you doing today?
Hey, we're doing fine. How can we help you?
I have a Colt AR-15, and I absolutely love it. It shoots everything I want to feed it, any kind of brand of ammo. I'm wanting to add a second AR to my collection, and I was looking at the DPMS Oracle or the Smith & Wesson M&P because they're fairly close in the price range, and I was wondering if you could tell me, in your opinion, what would be the best bang for my buck.
Well, I'm going to tell you that for your opinion, it's going to come down to whatever you want, because that was an issue that I kind of set my sights on when I was at the show, and I compared some of the the models for the lower end affordable models, which I think are very functional, and you don't have to spend a whole lot of money to get a good AR. If you're in the $600 to $750 range, you're doing fine. And the two you mentioned, the DPMS Oracle or the Smith and Wesson, I don't know which one, the new Sportster, is that the one you were looking at, or the 15T?
It's the one with the forward assist and the dust cover. That's two things I'm looking for.
Yeah, regardless of the configuration you get it in, I'm going to tell you whether you pick DPMS, Smith & Wesson, Daniel Defense, a Wyndham, which is new to the market, Bushmaster, Armalite, Colt, you can't go wrong because they all handle bullets well. And one thing I found out years ago when I was in the industry, one particular manufacturer, and they prefer that I not mention the name, manufactures the majority of the lowers. And or they have the design plans that most of the lowers have been designed after. So they're very similar. And then most of the uppers are the easy part of the gun. And since they're almost all the mil-spec, you can interchange many of them and build your own gun. I don't like to do that because I would rather you stick with Smith and get Smith upper, Smith lower, or DPMS upper, DPMS lower. I have one of each, to be honest with you. I have a DPMS. That's the longest standing gun kind of in my inventory. I've had that since they first came out many years ago, and I just recently purchased a Smith. And when we go out to training, we give our students who don't have guns a cross-section of guns to shoot, and the bottom line is it comes down to whatever they were shooting last that they like the most in most cases, because they all do exactly what they're supposed to do. They eat all the ammo that we put through them. They function very reliably, and they're good performers. So, the best I can tell you is if you're satisfied with what you have and you want to add one to it, you go with any of those mainline manufacturers. You can't go wrong.
All right, cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Don in Huber Heights. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How can we help you?
Well, what I want to ask was, I'm not comfortable carrying a gun in public. Plus, I don't have a concealed carry thing.
Okay.
But I'm 62 years old, and I'm getting ready to retire. I am armed at home, but I don't carry a gun in the car or nothing like that, because I haven't jumped through the hoops and all that to be able to do it. Plus, I've also heard that if you do have the concealed carry, you can't bring it in anywhere where you go.
Well, that's not really true. I mean, anywhere is that just depends on where you go. I mean, almost every place that I go, I carry my firearm with me.
Even inside a restaurant?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can carry, I mean, unless the restaurant is posted, you can carry inside a restaurant.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
Then sometimes they do post it.
Very few. And I mean, there are a few that have posted since the law changed back in September, but there are very few. I mean, I've been driving around. I can't remember a place that I've been to recently that I even had to worry about that. So there are a few, maybe some of the major chains where they've got a national policy, but most of the local places, whether they serve alcohol or not, no problem whatsoever. Most of them, in fact, don't want to post because they know that there's good folks out there that carry firearms, and they've been staying away for the last several years simply because they couldn't go in.
Well, my main question was about tasers.
Okay.
I know you guys work with guns and, you know, calibers and, you know, pistols and all that. Do you know anything about tasers?
Absolutely.
Well, I can tell you a couple of different things. In my line of work, we use tasers. They're very effective devices when utilized in a proper perspective or in a proper situation, and when they work the way they're designed to work. It's a mechanical device, obviously, that shoots two barbs. And as long as both barbs make contact with the subject, it does what it's supposed to do. They have a civilian version out there that actually maintains its pulse for 30 seconds, giving the person, the citizen, a chance to get away from the adversary and get to a safe place and or call the police. And it's certainly an option. The thing that I want to let you know is that it's not a replacement for a firearm. That's my personal and professional opinion. It has limited capabilities. It requires much, much more degrees of, let me just use the term accuracy for now, because basically, like I mentioned, both barbs have to hit the individual in order for it to work to complete the circuit for the electricity to be transmitted from the device to the assailant.
And the Taser C2, which is the civilian model, only has 15-foot range.
Yeah.
So by that point, you're really up close and personal.
So the civilian Taser, I don't know where I can buy them at or anything, but I would like to have one.
Sure. So you can buy them at many retail stores. I know that Evan English up at Old English has them in stock, and I think Peabody over in Kettering has them.
Are we talking like $300 or $400?
Yes, sir, you are. I think with all the package, the training video, you're looking at just under $400, and you need to go through the training because you have to certify that you've completed the training, and you actually go through a registration process with Taser, which does two things. It activates your warranty, and it also guarantees that if you're ever involved in a situation where you have to use your Taser in self-defense and you get a police report, they will replace that free of charge with a copy of that police report indicating it was utilized in its proper capacity.
Do I need a concealed carry to carry that?
No, you do not.
So I can go to Old English and work it out?
Yes, sir. You can go to one of the retail stores and you can actually purchase a civilian Taser, and then all the instructions are there. You have to review the CD. You'll have to call Taser. They'll give you a number that you actually have to enter, and you have to register it, and then you have to verify that you've completed the training, and then you have to actually do a shot with the Taser on a target that comes with it, and that has to be signed off by a certified instructor to demonstrate that you're competent in the use of the Taser.
Oh, that's before they'll let me have it, right?
No, you can get it up front. Oh, no, you can get it. But I'm just telling you, there's a process for you to get it activated and registered.
Oh, okay. So yes, they'll replace it if I have to use it. I see what you mean.
That's down the line. But to get it activated and registered, you have to follow the instructions in the manual purchased with the device.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tom, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Jason in Dayton, who's calling with a question. Jason, welcome to the show.
Yes, how are you guys doing today?
Hey, we're doing fine. How can we help you?
Well, I was wanting to know if you guys had heard any scuttlebutt on SCAR 17 mags, because everywhere I check, they're impossible to find.
Well, I will tell you this. Start with Evan up at Old English, because if Evan doesn't have it, he certainly can get it. Old English is probably, they've been in this business longer than anybody around here. And if you happen to be listening to the show on the last break, they mentioned that they're their business model emphasizes great selection, customer service through knowledge of their people, and they know that those are things that are difficult to get, and they will reach out and figure out a way to get those. That's not something that obviously just any place would carry, because when a retail store is looking at turning inventory, they're looking at things that are going to move. But the advantage he has is because of his high volume and because he has so many connections with so many different buyer groups, he can reach out to different buyer groups and get those rare items in a reasonable amount of time. Now, I'm not saying you can walk up there and get it next week, but if anybody can get it, I would recommend you give them a call and let them know exactly what you want, configuration, color, size, magazine capacity, whatever it is, how many you want. And while you're at it, you might as well get a couple if you're going to spend the money and take the time. And if anybody can get it, I'm sure they'd be the ones to go to.
Okay, well, I appreciate the help.
Sure. Thanks very much for calling the show. And one more call. Let's go out to Steve in West Carrollton. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? Hey. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, thank you very much for calling the show. How can we help you?
Also a CCW instructor, and I just happened to find out Jeff was your partner there. I announced his son's football games a couple years back.
Outstanding.
I don't know, 1660 radio. But anyway, this state rep, Mag, from down in Warren County, he was wanting, it's been in the paper the last couple of days, he'd like to be able to carry his gun in his car and park in the state house parking garage, which I think they said is underneath the building or something. And I just wanted to bring up to him or mention it that Disney World in Florida, who is the largest employer in the state, did a random search. They had that, you know, no guns at the workplace sign posted, no guns on this property type thing. They did a random search and fired, I think it was 1,500 or 1,600 employees for having guns in their automobiles. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, the people filed a class action suit, and I think it took approximately 15 months for it to be heard by the Florida Supreme Court. They ruled that Florida is a concealed carry state. What those people have in their cars is none of Disney World's business. It, the car's their personal property, and they have a right to protect themselves to and from work, and unless Disney World builds them some type of gun safe, which is what I've got some guys getting ready to do right now, file a suit in any place that you know prohibits us from bringing our guns in, we're going to have them hopefully put safes outside like they would have bus station lockers. Yeah. Then when we're finished our business, we can you know, get our firearm and leave. But that would be, wouldn't that be a precedent-setting case, that Florida case?
Yes, it would be precedent-setting. However, there's a couple of distinctions there. First of all, private property versus state property. And Mark and I were talking about this at the beginning of the show because the Buckeye Firearms Association posted information that in Ohio there's movement to pass House Bill 425, which will eliminate state-owned parking garages from the gun-free zones. And what we're trying to look at here is we're wondering how they can construe the parking garage as a building, and I think they're getting it in under the fact that it's a government building, since the parking garage is physically attached to the building where the people work. That would differentiate from private property, even if the building was attached to the building where the people work, in the sense that those people down at Disney are on private property versus public property.
Right, and that's the key word there is public property. It's
right.
Actually owned by the taxpayers.
Well, yeah. Sure, but it's also, you know, the same building that the legislature meets in. It's not a separate facility. The law went into effect in September of last year, parking garages were explicitly exempted from no carry places. You could leave your gun in the car. And I think what they're saying is that because this building is an underground garage as part of the legislative building, then that is not exempted. And Representative Ron Magg has introduced this HB 425 in order to change that.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they would have metal detectors like when people came out of the parking garage and, you know, to see if anybody was trying to sneak in there, and I would imagine they have to have some type of security or a badge or pass or something to even get in that garage, don't they?
Yeah, I would think so. We need to take our last break for the hour, so we're going to do that right now. If you'd like to get on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and we will take your call and get you done in the last few minutes that we have left in the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. Let's go directly back out to the phones and talk to Jerry from Sydney. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Yes.
How can we help you today?
My employer prohibits firearms in the cars in the parking lots, and I think Indiana just passed a law. Does Ohio have any legislation like that coming up?
I'm not aware of any that's pending, but I completely agree that that's something that we need to deal with. I think that, you know, that your vehicle should be considered your property no matter where it's located, and in fact, in my opinion, it should be considered an extension of your home under the Castle Doctrine, that whatever's in your vehicle, in your home, either way, it's the same, falls under the same requirements. We're not there yet, but I think that is something that we need to do.
And I also concur, and I want to go so far as to recommend that, as the last caller mentioned, House Bill 425 is designed to permit a carry in state-owned parking garages. I think that should extend to all parking garages and parking lots, parking facilities, because it's
public
kind of,
or private.
Right. It's kind of ridiculous to restrict it to one or the other.
It's not their car when it parks on their lot. It's still your car on their lot. Yeah, I mean, that's our opinion. Unfortunately, that's not the way the law is right now, and I think that's something that needs to get fixed.
Yeah, I hope somebody does soon.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Blake, who called from Yellow Springs. Blake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello there. Just a quick question. How often do you recommend changing out your personal carry ammo that you have out and about in the environment every day?
I think once a year. I recommend you go to the range and shoot that, make sure it works good in your gun. There's certainly no need to do that. We just do it as a matter of practice in my line of work and in my personal situation. Shoot it up once a year and get fresh and new. But you know, ammo, if it's treated properly, can be reliably accurate for long periods of time. But our recommendation would be once a year to shoot it and
well,
just replace it.
And when you're carrying it on your person, it's not going to be treated properly. I mean, it's exposed to extremes in weather and temperature and so forth and more humidity than normal. So once a year, is it going to work then? Absolutely. I've never yet had a round not fire, a personal protection round, when I go to fire it off. But by the same token, I know it's safe after a year, and I don't want to extend that much more than that because – If your life depends on it, you need for it to absolutely go.
Excellent. Thanks so much, and thanks for a great training in your great facility.
Thank you very much. Let's talk to Eric, who's calling from Springfield. Eric, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Yeah, I was considering getting my concealed carry license, and I heard you earlier listening to your show state that there was a change in the law back in September.
Right.
And I also heard you talking about being able to carry your weapon into establishments that serve alcohol.
Correct.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the change that took place on the law back in September?
Sure, be glad to. That was the big one. The places that serve alcohol for consumption in open containers are no longer automatically off limits. If you're there with your firearm, assuming the place is not posted, they haven't put up a sign saying no firearms are permitted, you can carry, and there's no problem with that, as long as you don't consume any alcohol while you are there in the premises. And so that is the restriction that went along with that, and that's a fairly understandable restriction for a lot of people. They say, hey, guns and alcohol don't mix, and that was the big argument against the bill initially. And frankly, the answer is we're not talking about guns and alcohol mixing, because you cannot consume legally if you are carrying inside a facility. And the other thing it changed was car carry. There are now no longer any restrictions on how a licensed person can carry a loaded handgun in their motor vehicle. So you can carry it any way that's safe, whether it's in a holster on your person or in a glove box or in a holster attached to the vehicle, which was not used to be. Some people like to carry it just loose in a pocket. We don't necessarily recommend that, but for some people that choose to do that, if they have nothing else in their pocket, that's certainly a lot of people have been doing that for decades. And that is now legal, and among other, practically any way that you would carry in your firearm in your motor vehicle is now safe. And those were the main changes that went into effect. There's also a restoration of rights bill that went into effect at the same time that allows people to get their firearms rights back and change the provisions for that.
Yeah, also note that those establishments reserve the right to post if they so desire prohibiting. However, as Mark mentioned earlier, fewer and fewer are doing that, and it's something that we hope will eventually go away altogether.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. And one other question.
Real quick, because we're almost out of time.
Okay, real quick. Can you recommend a good-sized caliber weapon for concealed and carry, like a .380? What do you guys preference?
.380 would be minimum. 9mm would be the next. And it's just going to come down to what's good for you. And I encourage you to come by the range, and we'll see if we can help you out.
Thanks very much. We're out of time. We really appreciate you being part of the show.